Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
In the event the authorities' demands are not met within 1 week, take all measures necessary to restore constitutional order in the Republic of Niger. Such measures may include the use of force.
Fear is growing. Last week's coup in Niger could lead to a regional military conflict. ECOWAS, a bloc of 15 West African nations, is threatening to use force to expel Niger's new military rulers. But Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea have warned against any military intervention in Niger. We'll get the latest. We'll also remember Juan Ramos, founder and leader of the Philadelphia chapter of the Young Lords. And we'll look at the life and legacy of the groundbreaking Irish singer and political activist Sinead O'Connor, who's died at the age of 56.
England's not the typical land of Madame George and Rosie. It's the home of police who kill black boys on the weekends.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In Ukraine, Russian missiles struck a residential high-rise in the city of Kryvyi Rih on Monday, killing at least 6 people, including a 10-year-old girl and her mother. Dozens more were injured in the attack. One resident said she raced to the scene of the blast after receiving a panic call from a friend who lived nearby.
I only heard, "Help me," so we jumped into our car and drove here. What we saw was pure horror, committed by the Russian, I don't want to say the word here. They hit a residential building, and her block is just next to it, so everything in her apartment was ruined. She survived and is alive, thank God.
Kryvyi Rih is the birthplace of the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky. Elsewhere, officials in Ukraine's Russian-occupied Donetsk region say 2 people were killed and 6 others injured when Ukrainian artillery fire struck a civilian bus. In Moscow, Russia's defense ministry says Ukraine launched a fresh wave of drone attacks on Russia's capital, with one of the devices striking an office tower that had been hit in a previous attack on Sunday. The governments of Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali have warned other West African nations not to intervene in Niger following last week's coup that deposed the democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum. A Burkina Faso government spokesperson made the announcement Monday after the ECOWAS bloc of West African nations imposed sanctions and threatened to restore Bazoum by force.
We warn that any military intervention against Niger is tantamount to a declaration of war against Burkina Faso and Mali. We warn that any military intervention against Niger would entail a withdrawal of Burkina Faso and Mali from ECOWAS, as well as the adoption of self-defense measures in support of the armed forces and the people of Niger.
Burkina Faso and Mali are led by military rulers following recent coups. On Monday, Germany suspended aid to Niger after the European Union and France cut humanitarian and military aid last week. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has stopped short of calling President Mohamed Bazoum's ouster by his own presidential guard a coup. Such a declaration would trigger an end to U.S. military aid to Niger, where in 2019, the U.S. opened a massive new drone base. The U.S. also has about 1,000 military personnel in Niger. They are saying they're now being confined to the U.S. military base. We'll have more on the coup in Niger after headlines. In Senegal, at least two people were killed Monday as protests erupted following the arrest of the opposition leader Ousmane Sonko. The Senegalese government also dissolved Sonko's Patriots of Senegal party after officials accused him of inciting violent protests last month in the capital, Dakar. This is the first time a political party has been banned in the West African nation since its independence from France in 1960. Sonko is a likely candidate in the 2024 presidential election, who's popular amongst younger Senegalese voters. He's been accused of plotting an insurrection and criminal association with a so-called terrorist body, charges he and his supporters say are false. In Lebanon, fighting between rival armed groups inside the largest Palestinian refugee camp continued for a third day Monday after attempts to broker a ceasefire failed. Another four people were killed, bringing the death toll to nine. Dozens of others have been injured. Families are trying to escape the Ain el-Hilwa refugee camp, which houses tens of thousands of Palestinians, but many have nowhere else to shelter. Meanwhile, the United Nations has suspended its aid and operations at the camp amidst the violence between militant factions and members of the Fatah group. In northern China, at least 11 people are dead, more than two dozen missing after the remnants of last week's super typhoon Doksuri flooded Beijing for the fourth consecutive day. It's one of the worst storms to hit China's capital region in over a decade. Another major storm, Typhoon Hanun, is bearing down on the Japanese island of Okinawa and could turn toward mainland China later in the week. Here in the U.S., a wildfire that erupted Friday in the Mojave Desert has exploded in size, consuming more than 77,000 acres in California and Nevada. It's among dozens of wildfires burning across the United States. Elsewhere, a summer heat wave in the southern U.S. enters its third month today, with record temperatures forecast for cities in Texas and the Gulf Coast. In Arizona, Phoenix recorded a high temperature of 108 degrees Fahrenheit Monday, ending a record-breaking string of 31 consecutive days with highs above 110 degrees Fahrenheit. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak says he'll authorize more than 100 new licenses for oil and gas drilling in the North Sea to maximize domestic extraction of fossil fuels. Sunak announced the plan Monday during a visit to a Shell gas terminal in northeastern Scotland. Sunak insisted his plan is compatible with the UK's commitments to achieve net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050.
Now, when it comes to our energy security, we're still going to need oil and gas. 25% of our energy will come from oil and gas, even in 2050. Far better than we get that from here at home.
Geologists say the Rosebank field in the North Sea holds more than 500 million barrels of oil, more than enough to prevent the UK from meeting its climate commitments. Friends of the Earth Scotland said in a statement, quote, burning oil and gas is driving extreme weather and killing people on every continent. Yet Rishi Sunak is gleefully encouraging the arsonists to go and put more fuel on the fire, they said. The U.S. State Department says it'll soon introduce a resolution at the United Nations Security Council authorizing a multinational armed force to be deployed to Haiti as the island nation grapples with worsening political instability and gang violence. Last weekend, Kenya's government offered to send 1,000 police officers to Haiti to support Haitian police, an offer applauded by U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Many Haitians remain opposed due to the disastrous history of UN, US, and foreign interventions in Haiti. The filmmaker, artist, and activist Catherine Kane, known by her initials KK, has died at the age of 84 after a long struggle with cancer. Kane founded the Haitian restaurant and cultural center Tap Tap in Miami. Her films celebrated Haitian history and culture. She also documented how the United States twice supported coups against Haiti's democratically elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Following the second coup in 2004, KK Kane helped organize a flight that brought Aristide from exile in the Central African Republic to Jamaica. The Pentagon says President Biden has selected Colorado Springs to host the permanent headquarters of U.S. Space Command, reversing a decision by former President Trump to move the facility to Huntsville, Alabama. The announcement on Monday came as Republican Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville continued to block the Senate from confirming Biden's military nominations over the Pentagon's policy of paying for employees' abortion-related travel expenses. U.S. health officials are urging states to retain more low-income people in Medicaid as they warn too many recipients are now losing their coverage. Some 4 million people have recently been dropped from Medicaid over paperwork issues as states continue to purge the rolls after the lifting of a pandemic-era rule on eligibility. That figure is likely higher as only 38 states have voluntarily made their data public. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken has rejected a call by Australia's top diplomat to end the Biden administration's efforts to extradite WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange to the United States to face espionage and hacking charges. The Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong made the remarks during a joint news conference with Blinken after talks in Brisbane on Saturday.
We have made clear our view that Mr. Assange's case has dragged on for too long and our desire that it be brought to a conclusion. And we've said that publicly, and you would anticipate that that reflects also the position we articulate in private.
A growing number of Australian elected officials, including the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, have urged the U.S. to drop its case against Assange, who is an Australian citizen. Secretary Blinken responded Saturday saying Assange was charged with, quote, very serious criminal conduct.
The actions that he is alleged to have committed risked very serious harm to our national security, to the benefit of our adversaries, and put named human sources at grave risk.
Australian lawmaker Andrew Wilkie, who is co-chair of the Bring Julian Assange Home Parliamentary Group, rejected claims by Secretary Blinken, calling them patent nonsense. He told The Guardian, quote, Mr. Blinken would be well aware of the inquiries in both the U.S. and Australia, which found that the relevant WikiLeaks disclosures did not result in harm to anyone, he said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at the growing crisis in Niger, where the country's democratically elected president, Mohamed Bazoum, was overthrown last week by his own presidential guard. The former president has been detained since Wednesday. Many of his top political allies have been arrested. Over the weekend, ECOWAS, the bloc of 15 West African nations, slapped sanctions on leaders of the coup and threatened to expel them by force unless they cede power within a week. This is ECOWAS President Omar Touré of Gambia.
In the event the authorities' demands are not met within 1 week, take all measures necessary to restore constitutional order in the Republic of Niger. Such measures may include the use of force.
But three other African nations, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea, have warned that any military intervention in Niger would be seen as a declaration of war against them as well. The countries also warned that military intervention in Niger could destabilize the entire region, which has faced a spike in attacks from Islamic militants. A Burkina Faso government spokesperson made the announcement Monday.
We warn that any military intervention against Niger is tantamount to a declaration of war against Burkina Faso and Mali. We warn that any military intervention against Niger would entail a withdrawal of Burkina Faso and Mali from ECOWAS, as well as the adoption of self-defense measures in support of the armed forces and the people of Niger.
Niger is a former French colony which gained its independence in 1960. Over the weekend, Niger's new rulers accused France of plotting to intervene militarily. Niger is a major supplier of uranium to France and the European Union. France is planning to start evacuating French and European Union residents today. On Sunday, thousands of supporters of the new junta attempted to storm the French embassy in the capital, Niamey. Niger has also been a close ally to the United States. The U.S. has approximately 1,000 troops in Niger. Following the coup, the troops have been restricted to a U.S. military base in the northern city Agadez, where the U.S. spent over $100 million building a drone base. The Biden administration has so far refused to describe last week's event as a coup because doing so would force Washington to cut security aid to Niger. The Intercept reported last week that one of the leaders of last week's coup, Brigadier General Moussa Salou Barmou, who had been trained by the U.S. military at Fort Benning in Georgia. According to The Intercept, U.S.-trained military officers have taken part in 11 coups in West Africa since 2008, including in Burkina Faso and Mali. In Moscow, the Kremlin has described the situation in Niger as a, quote, cause for serious concern. But the head of the Russian mercenary group, Wagner, has reportedly welcomed the coup. Wagner's leader, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has been quoted saying, "What happened in Niger is nothing other than the struggle of the people of Niger with their colonizers," unquote. To talk more about the crisis in Niger, we're joined by Stephanie Savelle. She's co-director of the Costs of War Project at Brown University's Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs. She's an anthropologist who's researched U.S. militarism in West Africa and beyond. Professor Savelle, welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Can you start off by just explaining how this coup took place, the involvement of the Presidential Guard, etc.?
Sure, yeah. On July 27th, the members of the Presidential Guard, so the President Mohamed Bazoum's own guard, detained the president and the spokesman for what they're calling the National Council for the Safeguard of the Homeland. This is the name for the junta, declared that the Nigerian president was overthrown on national television and that General Chiani, who oversees the Presidential Guard, declared he was leading a transitional government. So the exact reasons for the coup are actually still unclear. Chiani, he talked about the need to stop the country's demise, and he was referring to the similar reasons for coups in neighboring Burkina Faso and Mali, because there's been so much insecurity, a huge rise of Islamist militant terror attacks, as you mentioned. And so he was saying that because the country is kind of spiraling into security, the military needed to step in. And so he was kind of the head of this council, and a bunch of senior military leaders stepped in to support him. What's confusing a little bit about his claim is that this region is a kind of hub for terror attacks. There have been over 1,800 in the first 6 months of the year, but only 77 deaths occurred in Niger, as opposed to out of about 4,600 in total in the region of Burkina Faso and Mali. So Niger has really managed to keep a lot of the attacks and the insecurity and the conflict to its border areas. It's been known to be a kind of bastion of stability and resilience in a region that's just been spiraling into chaos. So it is a perplexing claim on the part of General Chiani.
And could you talk to us about this rising presence of not only U.S. forces, but also other European troops in the country? Most Americans are not aware of this growing U.S. military presence in Africa.
Not at all. I was there in January, actually, and, you know, it was just shocking to me when I was in the airport how many foreigners I was seeing moving in and out of the country, which is, a first for me in many years in West Africa. So over 1,000 U.S. service personnel are in Niger, but lots of other countries are also there. France, Germany, Italy, Belgium, Canada at times has provided assistance. And a lot of these Western powers are saw Niger as a, this kind of stable democracy, and we're pouring security assistance, that is funding for military and police efforts, training efforts, a lot of weapons sales as well from the U.S. And elsewhere. So they're pouring all this security assistance to kind of bolster this so-called democracy. I went to Agadez to see the U.S. installation, the airbase there. So it was $100 million the U.S. spent on building this airbase. It costs about $30 million a year to maintain. And it is a massive, sophisticated installation in the Sahara Desert. And the drones there, the U.S. drones, are being used in the U.S. counterterror operations, what we call the post-9/11 wars, in the surrounding desert area. So here, it's strategically located in the middle of Algeria, Libya, Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, Nigeria, Chad, that whole belt where we've seen this kind of growing unrest. The U.S. is right there conducting these, real operations. U.S. is also located at a couple of other bases in Niger in different parts of the country, with special operations forces, trainers that go in and out. So there's far more people actually than those official 1,000 troops. There's lots of people going in and out who are on short stays, and those don't even count towards the totals.
And you mentioned the coups and recent coups in Burkina Faso and Mali, but those were conducted, from what we understand, by people trained originally by the United States, officers trained by the United States. What do we know about the coup leaders in what is happening here?
So we do know that at least one of the coup leaders, General Bahmou, a colonel, don't quote me on that. He was definitely trained by the U.S. military. I mean, I think we can look at this at an individual level. There are certainly arguments to be made that, U.S. training kind of empowers certain military leaders. But I think we also need to look at this as a structural issue. So what happens when the U.S. and other Western powers pour hundreds of millions of dollars into the security assistance sector? This is basically money for the military and the gendarmes, the police that fight the insurgency, is that the military is really boosted at the expense of other government institutions. A recent UNDP study showed that countries that have a oversized involvement of the military in political life and a very politicized military and a long history of military leadership in government, which Niger and a lot of these countries do, they're far more likely to have an ongoing pattern of military coups. So there's a lot of factors at stake that make a coup more likely. But certainly the U.S. pouring all of this money and this kind of outsized reliance on the military as a tool for aid to these countries is a contributing factor.
I wanted to just go back to that, who he is, The Intercept reporting that just last month, coup leader, and as you said, Brigadier General Moussa Salou Bahmou, met with the head of U.S. Army Special Operations Command, Lieutenant General Jonathan Braga, at the U.S. drone base in Niger. Also, Secretary of State Blinken was there. So if you could talk about the significance of this and also talk about uranium. When I saw all of this happening, I thought back to Joe Wilson's piece, the former State Department ambassador to Gabon, who in 2003, a few months after President George W. Bush invaded Iraq, wrote that famous New York Times op-ed asking, did the Bush administration manipulate intelligence about Saddam Hussein's weapons programs to justify an invasion of Iraq? The piece was headlined, What I Didn't Find in Africa. And he's talking about uranium in Niger. So if you can address all of those things.
That's right. Uranium is a big so Niger is the sixth or seventh largest uranium producer in the world. This is certainly a dynamic of the conflict. I visited Africa last year. It's the head of U.S. Military Africa Command. And there is a lot of talk of, you know, not just the uranium in Niger, but all of this region's resources, natural resources, because there are many other types of mining going on in this area. It's very rich in terms of some of these the resources that go into a lot of the, you know, a lot of important cell phones and you know, other kinds of things like that. So there's a talk of the need to provide stability and stable governance in this area because of all these natural resources. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're seeing such a big outcry against this coup in Niger at this particular moment, because there is talk of sanctions against Russian uranium. And so, this uranium has actually become a really important global source. So that's one answer to your question. The other about General Barmu. So he, as you said, has a very, very close relationship with the United States. He has been he's been trained by the United States over the years, works closely with all of the special operations forces that are going on in Niger. And the U.S. is certainly in 2017, there was a special operations maneuver in Niger in which the U.S. had four service members who were killed. Some viewers may remember that. And at the time, and the U.S. people were saying, well, what are U.S. service members doing in Niger? And they were leading a raid on the compound of an Islamist militant leader. And these were special operations forces who were working in close partnership with Barmu and the Nigerian special forces. So this has been an ongoing relationship.
I wanted to ask you, over the weekend, a block of 15 West African nations not only slapped sanctions on the leaders of the coup, but also threatened to intervene militarily. Wondering your sense of what the potential is for this this internal conflict to become a broader conflict in West Africa.
Honestly, it's very worrisome. It's the first time that ECOWAS, this bloc, has threatened military force against a coup in the region. So in Burkina Faso, when the coups in Burkina Faso and Mali happened in the past few years, ECOWAS, enacted sanctions and other kinds of closing the borders and that kind of thing, but they did not threaten military force. And so now with ECOWAS threatening military force, to reinstate President Bazoum, and then Burkina Faso and Mali, which, remember, have these military-led governments. And so basically what they're saying is, in solidarity with the new military-led government in Niger, we're going to step in and retaliate if these other ECOWAS countries invade Niger. So it's a real threat, and it's quite worrisome. I mean, I think one of the most important things to bear in mind is that this is an incredibly impoverished region. 4.3 million people in Niger alone are in need of humanitarian assistance. Climate change has been a huge factor in impoverishing people and preventing them from pursuing traditional livelihood pursuits like nomadism and herding and farming. The land has become increasingly arid. So there's a lot of dynamics at play in the reasons that the conflict is happening. And you just it's just horrifying to think that this could devolve into a broader conflict between nations.
Talking about this broader conflict at a global scale, Stephanie Seville, as we said in Moscow, the Kremlin says that the situation in Niger is a cause for serious concern. Wagner head, Yevgeny Prigozhin, has been quoted saying what happened in Niger is nothing more than the struggle of the people of Niger with their colonizers. This weekend, major protests supporting the coup, people shouting Putin, Putin, putting down France and the United States. What about this as a kind of proxy war?
Yeah.